Hello and welcome back to Let the Stone Speak. I'm Brent Nuchtigall. On today's program, we're going to be taking you through the evidence of a new discovery that was made in Megiddo in northern Israel, one of the most heavily excavated sites. They've finally found a layer that dates to the end of the 7th century BC. We're going back 2,600 years to the time period when King Josiah reigned over Judah. We'll be taking you through the journal article to describe what they've found there and some popular reporting of it. The popular reporting, of course, anything regarding Megiddo is always going to be headlined with battle about Armageddon. So we'll take you through some of that sensational reporting and then look at the evidence of what they've found there at Megiddo after a century of excavating, finally finding a clean layer that dates to the time period of when the Bible would put King Josiah on the scene for his last stand and where he would be defeated in battle and die at the hand of the Egyptians. So we'll get to that in a second. I did want to just mention that I'm here in Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma. We have our exhibit, The Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered. This exhibit is going to be on display till May 15th. No more extensions past that. That's it. So if you're anywhere in the area, please come and see the exhibit and receive a tour of the exhibit as well. We've got 10th century BCE artifacts here, 3,000 years old, some of the most important in the world. Here right now in the middle of Oklahoma, and I'll be heading back to Israel real soon. So come and see that, this exhibit. I also wanted to mention, if you like the content of today's show, we have a magazine that we put out six times per year. It's called Let the Stone Speak as well. This is our latest edition, the March-April edition. This one goes through some of the evidence of who the Pharaoh was during Joseph's time. We have a number of articles in here about the transition from the Iron Age the Bronze Age to the Iron Age and what that says potentially about the United Monarchy. We have an article about King Hezekiah and his outreach to Egypt based on some seals that have been discovered in Jerusalem. So really interesting archaeology, biblical history. Magazine. If you want to receive this, go to armstronginstitute.org or write an email to letters@armstronginstitute.org requesting the magazine. We'll make sure you get that absolutely free six times per year. If you like the video, don't forget to subscribe, hit the bell notifications as well to make sure you don't miss anything. And then finally, we're just completing right now our excavation about 100 meters south of the southern wall of the Temple Mount with Professor Yosef Garfinkel and the Armstrong team over there right now. This was to expose more of a gatehouse, what looks to be a gatehouse. In ancient Jerusalem, the royal quarter of Jerusalem, and we have several videos about that, and we have an excavation blog. You can check out some of the latest from that as well. So all of that interesting archaeology that we're doing to the side, we're going to be talking about an excavation we weren't involved in, yet the Megiddo team is always really good about publishing their discoveries. And this discovery was first published in a couple of journal articles, the Scandinavian Journal of the Old Testament. The one I've got here is entitled Josiah at Megiddo, New Evidence from the Field. It's written by Israel Finkelstein, Matthew Adams, Alexander Fantelkin, apologies for that, and Asaf Kleiman. So we'll be going through parts of this and then some popular reporting about this discovery. So a bit of context from Josiah's time. And I will say that this period from the 7th century, 6th century BCE, there's so much archaeological evidence about this time and archaeological discoveries about this time that match so well to the biblical text that most scholars do believe in the accuracy of the biblical text for this time period. They might say there's some embellishments or maybe some of the motives and that's been written in later or whatever, but at least the hard facts of the stories in the Bible, there's so much archaeological evidence, including the people's names, as we'll cover, that it's like, okay, this happened. However, for this, there's a really interesting event that takes place right at the end of Josiah's life, King Josiah, that was like, well, what's he doing? He's the king of Judah. He reigns from 640 to 609 BC. And what's he doing all the way in the north in the what used to be the kingdom of Israel by Megiddo? Who does he think he is? He's trying to, the Bible describes how Josiah, in both accounts, in Kings and Chronicles, we'll read in a second, he's trying to head off the Egyptian army as the Egyptian, big Egyptian army is going up to save the Assyrians from the Babylonians. And Josiah goes all the way up there and says, what are you doing? And yet the territory that typically belongs to the southern kingdom, or the kingdom of Judah, is all the way in the south, headquartered in Jerusalem. Jerusalem's really in the northern border of what would be considered biblical Judah. And what's he doing all the way in the north? And this is just really fascinating time period in history. I find it fascinating because you've got the interaction between the major empires of the Mesopotamia and Egypt and of the ancient world here, the ancient Near East, and then Israel and Judah right in the mix. And if you recall your biblical history, you know that the kingdom of Israel Judah split from Israel, if you like, either way you look at it. Israel split from the house of David, ruling from Jerusalem after Solomon died. And this was in the mid to late 10th century BC. And then the kingdom of Israel and the 10 tribes of Israel, they had a separate number of separate dynasties, and they're going to be ruling from different cities, finally settling on Samaria, would be the capital of the northern tribes. And then the southern kingdom is going to be one dynasty from David's time all the way through till the end, and they'll be ruling from Jerusalem. And you have interaction between the two nations throughout a couple hundred years. Well, the Assyrian Empire comes through in the late 8th century, mid to late 8th century, and they start taking over territory of the entire region, but including Israel, the northern tribes. They take them fully into captivity, ending that around 720 BC. And then they continue on further south to try and take then Judah, and they're very successful at taking over many of the cities. And this goes through Sargon II's time and Sennacherib's time, Assyrian kings. And then during King Hezekiah's time, Sennacherib tries to take Jerusalem. He's unsuccessful, and the southern kingdom survives because of this. And the southern kingdom will survive for another 100 years, about a century, a little over a century. Now, in the intervening time where the northern tribes have gone into captivity into Assyria, the Assyrians replace the inhabitants of this northern territory of Israel, all the way from Dan, basically, to Jerusalem. They replace it, well, almost to Jerusalem. They replace the Israelites with foreign imports. This is described in 2 Kings chapter 17. These foreign imports come from the land of Mesopotamia, Babylon, and they settle in the land. And by the time Josiah comes along, these native Mesopotamians that are in the land of the former Israelites, they've been there for 60, 70 years. They're well established there, second or third generation. They are going to be known to us in history as the Samaritan people that you would even get to later on. That's written about in the New Testament as well, having interactions there. But they're going to be there as a foreign people that accept the God of Israel, Yahweh. However, they worship him in the ways of their forefathers in Mesopotamia. They bring along Babylonian religion, and then they learn about Yahweh from an Israelite priest. Anyhow, long story short, you don't have Israelites there. You have Samaritans there. Now, when you get to Josiah's time, and I remember I said he rules around 640, and he rules, comes into power very young. He dies young in 609. You have in the Bible this interesting scenario where he first clears out Jerusalem and Judah of the pagan idolatry that was there, left over from Manasseh, his father. And then what you have is him deciding that, well, this isn't enough. I'm going to venture north into the territory that belonged to the Samaritans that the ancient Israelites were in, but this used to be territory that belonged to Israel. Israel, and I'm Israel, I'm the tribe of Judah, I'm the dynasty of David. And we're not really sure of his 100% of his motives, but he goes into the territory that was formerly Israelite territory. Now, it's interesting because during Josiah's reign, you have a vacuum of power. in the waning power of Assyria, the rise of Babylon. They've got other issues, what they're dealing with the Medes coming over and Assyria is occupied there. And so Assyria largely retreats from the region around 630. And so 630 is right during Josiah's reign. So who's governing? Who's the major power that's really concerned with the northern area of Israel? Nobody. You've got the Samaritan people. They were probably under the protection of the Assyrians. But Josiah has this vacuum in which to expand the territory of Israel and of Judah. And scholars have looked at this thinking, well, really, is he really doing this or is he not? Well, let's just go to the text and then we're going to get to the archaeology of this site. I was going to do it the other way around, but I think the biblical narrative kind of is a good way of leading into this. So there's a couple of accounts, obviously, Kings and Chronicles. They cover similar history. The Book of Kings is largely an eyewitness account, especially during this time, I would say. And then Chronicles was written later, perhaps 150, 200 years after this, 150 years, 200 years after this time period. Around that time. But they both go through similar events. Chronicles gives a little bit more detail, as it would, because Chronicles is about what's going on with the house of David more than what's going on with the kingdom of Israel. And so there's going to be more details there. But we'll start with the king's account and see what it says here about Josiah. This is 2 Kings 23, and we're just going to read verses 19 and 20. And this is from the Jerusalem Publication Society version. It says this, "And all the houses of the high places that were in the cities of Samaria." So you remember, Samaria doesn't belong to Judah, doesn't belong to Josiah. Samaria is all the way in the north, capital city. And then the area around the capital city, or the whole kingdom of Israel, could have been known as Samaria as well. So he's going to take down the high places. These high places are pagan places of worship, which the kings of Israel had made to provoke the Eternal. Josiah took away and did to them according to all the acts that he had done in Bethel. And he slew the priests of the high places that were there upon the altars and burned men's bones upon them. And he returned to Jerusalem. So really interesting. Kings has him going up into the territory that used to belong to the Israelites where the Samaritans were and destroying some of their altars. This is what Chronicles gives a little bit more detail about it. This is 2 Chronicles 34 verses 5 to 7. I'll just read through this. It says, "And he burned the bones of the priests upon their altars and purged Judah and Jerusalem." And the reason we're going through this is because it gives us a historical context to what Josiah is doing all the way up in Megiddo. The Bible says that he was actually taking over territory that belonged to the Israelites, the former tribes of Israel. And now we find evidence of a biblical event up there in Megiddo that the Bible says involved Josiah. So that's why we're going through this, to get through what the Bible says first. And I think that's always the best. This is the approach we have at the Armstrong Institute. Let's take what the text says. Let's understand what the text says as it is originally written. And then we'll go from there. Most archaeologists will do their archaeology somewhat separate from the Bible and then perhaps compare it afterwards. We take the approach of Dr. Elot Mazar, who we learned from, and you treat the Bible, you take it as this is the best historical text we have to go alongside the discoveries that we make and give them context as a historical account. And of course, sometimes the Bible is not going to discuss everything that happens. It only discusses what's interesting to the biblical narrative. However, there's a lot of these other events that take place in the context of what's going on in the actual world of empires, as we see with Josiah. So it gives us a lot of context for the archaeological discoveries. Anyhow, continuing here, it says, "And so did he in the cities of Manasseh and Ephraim and Simeon, even unto Naphtali, with their axes round about," or in their regions it could be described. And he broke down the altars and beat the Asherim, their gods, and graven images and powders, and hewed down the sun images throughout all the land of Israel and returned to Jerusalem. So this gives us, it said in Kings, they did it to the cities of Samaria. And here it actually details the tribal lands that they went to. So Ephraim, if you're going to go from south to north, you would have Judah, Benjamin, Ephraim, Manasseh. And then you have the Jezreel Valley, right where Megiddo is, and Issachar and Zebulun held that. And then as you go up towards the area towards the west of the Sea of Galilee, that's the land of Naphtali, all the way up almost, you could say, close to Dan in the north. So when it says he did this even unto Naphtali, this is going almost to the whole extent of where the kingdom of David controlled, which is incredible. That he's going to want to control this territory as well. So that gives you an idea of what the Bible says about this. Now, it's you know, some people would say, well, there's no way that Josiah controlled all this territory. Well, I mean, if you look at the vacuum that was there, certainly this is possible that he would be the dominant, he could be the dominant power, the region dominant regional power in this window of the demise of Assyria before Babylon takes power over the area. So it's definitely the vacuum there. Well, who controlled it? You could say, well, the Samaritans controlled it and Judah was there and they were just, well, okay. The Bible says Judah decided under Josiah, well, this used to belong to Israel. All this territory, Dan to Beersheba, belonged to Israel. We're going to go and make sure that those people that are there are not worshiping the pagan gods. Worshiping God in a pagan way. We're not going to be doing that anymore. And this whole period, again, is so well attested. Just this next verse, I think, verse 8 is interesting. It's kind of out of the scope of what I'm talking about, apart from the fact that it mentions an individual. It says, now in the 18th year of his reign, when he had purged the land of the house, he sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah. So this man, Shaphan, he's a well-known scribe. He was a scribe during the time of Josiah. He had a son, Gemariah, son of Shaphan, if you like. And we know that Gemariah, his son, and his father Shaphan, these are real historic personalities because in the city of David in Jerusalem in the early 80s, there was an excavation led by Dr. Yigal Shalom of Hebrew University. They discovered the Bulla House. These are where they discovered over 50 seal impressions, tiny little clay seal impressions with names on them. And one of the names that they found there was Gemariah, the son of Shaphan, this Shaphan right here. Gemariah is written on the Bulla, or the seal impression, and his name, Gemariah, and his father's name is mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 36, I believe it is. I think it's verse 10. It talks about how a few years after Josiah's death, Jeremiah the prophet, he's writing gets Baruch his scribe to write down part of the first prophecies of Jeremiah and to go and deliver them and tell them to King Jehoiakim. And he does that, first of all, Baruch does, in the chamber that belonged to Gemariah, the son of Shaphan. Mentioned in the Bible, this guy, and he's mentioned here in an archaeological discovery as well. There's been several seal impressions that have been discovered of biblical figures from Josiah's time. Another one of these was found in the Gavati excavation. This is the excavation that's taking place in the very northern part of the city of David, where they discovered that massive moat. About almost a decade ago now, they discovered a seal impression that belonged to Nathan Malek. I think I have the verse here about Nathan Malek. 2 Kings chapter 23. And verse 11, it says, and he took away the horses that the king of Judah, this is the JPS, kings of Judah had given to the sun at the entrance of the house of the eternal by the chamber of Nathan Malek, the officer, which was in the precincts. And he burned the chariots of the sun with fire. Josiah did, cleaning up the temple. And there's this guy, Nathan Malek, that's mentioned there. His name, this is weird. His name is never mentioned anywhere other than this verse here. For 2,500 years, Nathan Melech, this is it, just here. And then it pops up again in Jerusalem, dating from a layer that includes this time period of Josiah here in the city of David. And it's like, well, this is Nathan Melech from the Bible. It's the only other time he's mentioned here in the Bible and here in the seal impression in the city of David. I could go through a list of other biblical personalities, first and last names that have been discovered, particularly in Jerusalem, that match the time period of Josiah and the period of Jeremiah as well. So you've got so much historical backing for this narrative already. Okay, so what's he doing all the way in the north of Israel? And what's the archaeological evidence that they've found here at the excavation? This article, there's a couple of articles I'll link to that you can read. They're pretty good. First is by Ariel David from Haaretz. He writes, "Archaeologists find evidence of Egyptian army that felled biblical king at Megiddo." And Armageddon or Ha-Megiddo means the mound or the Mount of Megiddo. And so this overlooks the Jezreel Valley. Critically, it's on this main trade route. This is why Megiddo is so important. Why they found so many layers there, occupational layers throughout history, is because you've got this, if you're going to go from Egypt over to Mesopotamia, to Assyria, to Babylon, you're going to be traveling most likely right past Megiddo, which is, there's a huge ridge, well not huge, but a big ridge that goes, the Carmel Ridge that goes north, southeast to northwest, going all the way to the coast near Haifa, and then cutting across that, there's a couple of valleys that you can travel through, and one of the cities that guards that valley or that pass is Megiddo. So this is right on the main trade route from east to west in the ancient world. Very critical city to control. So they've been excavating here for over a century. The pertinent excavation that they did took place for these results that they found took place in 2016 through 2022. I think they had three different seasons. And again, they published this recently. So I'll leave links to both these articles, the Haaretz article and the Times of Israel article where they interview the archaeologists involved. But I want to quote directly from the scientific report here. So this is Haifa University, University of Tel Aviv University as well. The Center for the Mediterranean World as well is involved here, and Ben Gurion, University of the Negev. So they start excavating through this, and what they want to find, the purpose of this is to find this layer or these layers from the 7th century, this time period where the Assyrians were kind of moving out, or they were still there, they were dominant, and then they're moving back out, retreating. And then you have the next real historical influence is the Egyptians coming through to fight against the Babylonians with the Assyrians during the time period of Josiah. Josiah, that battle takes place in 609. So you've got this period of 20 or 30 years. What's happening here? And he's being dominant? And they've finally been able to find in this Area X, as they call it. Archaeologists label the different areas of sites, Area A, B, C, D, E, whatever. And their Area X is, they've found finally a structure, a building that dates to this time period, including the reign of Josiah. Now, that's cool in itself, but who was there during that time period? So then you have to look at the material culture, the stuff that they found in the context of this building. And they found several phases, I think six or seven phases to this building in Area X that belonged pretty much to this 7th century. And one of those phases, really interestingly enough, that they've dated to sometime between the mid to the late 7th century, so right during the time period of Josiah, what they have is they've found lots of evidence of Egyptian influence there. And perhaps even not just Egyptian influence, but Egyptian habitation, meaning that there were Egyptians living there at Megiddo during the time period of Josiah for at least part of his reign. And they found this, and they found evidence of this because of all the pottery that they found there. So this is the main part of the main part that's connecting this to the story of Josiah and the movement of the Egyptian troops. We've got an Egyptian layer, an Egyptian stratum, if you like, at Megiddo, and this is based on the Egyptian ware that they found there. I'm going to quote from it right now. The pottery that they found. Because remember, pottery is what survives. And so you can learn so much from the pottery, where it was made, the styles of it change over time. So it'll give you a dating tool as well. But then you can different places have different styles of pottery as well. So you can tell what people lived there based on the pottery in some instances. The pottery. It says, "Many sherds were retrieved from the floors of X3. This is the third occupational layer within X. The assemblage featured a unique combination of local and imported wares. The latter, or the imported wares, include items from Egypt, Cyprus, and Aegean. Those shared collections may contain items from earlier layers. Both the local imported forms can be safely dated to the 7th century BC. But the local pottery shows some continuity from the previous phase of the Iron Age, but it's different from the latter. Of particular interest are locally produced Assyrianized forms. So you have some locally produced Assyrian forms there. I mean, they look like Assyrian pottery, but it's been produced here, which makes sense, right, when the Assyrians were dominant there. It says, also noteworthy is they found a small fragment of a ridged Judahite-style cooking jug made of matzah clay, attesting to at least limited contact with the 7th century BCE Judah. Little tidbit there. They actually found a vessel at Megiddo from this time period, the time period of Josiah, that was made in Jerusalem. Most likely in Jerusalem or close to the Jerusalem region. And it's all the way up there of this style, indicating that there was either trade or people, but perhaps just trade. There was only one shirt. So at least limited contact with 7th century BCE Judah, which makes sense if Josiah is all the way in the north. Then it gets to the main headline part of this story. The largest imported group originated from Egypt. It includes more than 100 indicative pieces, such as rims to differ from the body shirts. So indicative piece means something that is diagnostic, meaning that you can tell what shape of the vessel, what vessel it came from based on this part, this indicative part of the vessel. So you found lots of pieces, but 100 rims. So more than 100 pieces, but 100 indicative pieces of serving, cooking, and storage vessels. No other site in the region has produced such a large quantity of Egyptian forms. In fact, the number of Egyptian items in the 7th century context in the southern Levant is negligible. So that's the big takeaway from what they found. Everywhere else we look, we don't find many Egyptian forms in the southern Levant. Israel, Lebanon, Israel, even across, you know, perhaps into Jordan, down into Judah, not much Egyptian pottery. And yet we find a bunch here. The majority of the imported wares came from Egypt. What's going on? Most of the vessels have crude shapes. They are greenish in fabric with many organic inclusions and sometimes incisions on the exterior. Parallels to these vessels can be found at numerous sites in Egypt. The Egyptian origin of the Megiddo vessels has been confirmed by petrographic analyses of selected examples, meaning that they found that these were, I might have said they were made locally, but these ones were made around the Nile Delta and then brought here, these crude examples. This is when they get to their discussion. The higher quantity of imports from Egypt is unparalleled in the entire Levant. The Egyptian assemblage, or this group of pottery, is comprehensive, consisting of all types of vessels. Because the Megiddo Egyptian pottery repertoire includes crude, undecorated, and poorly fired vessels, it's hard to interpret it as indicative of trade relations. Therefore, the finds seem to suggest the actual presence of Egyptians. So Egyptians being there. And then they give a couple of reasons, of a couple of ideas that they have as to how to interpret the fact that you have these Egyptian pottery vessels there. And then they say a third and perhaps the most attractive possibility is to interpret the finds as representing an Egyptian administrative center with a garrison unit in the days of the 26th dynasty. So perhaps even there was Egyptians there on site. Just a quote now from the Times of Israel piece regarding this as well. This is the article, Archaeologists Find First Evidence of Epic Biblical Battle at Armageddon. The abundance of unadorned and poorly fired vessels suggests that the artifacts did not reach the city for sale at markets. And this, then it quotes Kleiman, one of the authors and excavators there. Due to the abundant evidence of these vessels in the excavated structure, and as it is unlikely that the local population suddenly decided to import crude vessels from Egypt, We assumed that the simplest solution is that we are dealing with foreign groups, maybe indeed part of an Egyptian garrison that took over at Megiddo following the retreat of the Assyrians from the Levant. So that's their best guess, that maybe the Assyrian, maybe the Egyptians took over right during this time period of Josiah. Finally, back to this summary here from scientific report. It says the finds at Megiddo show cultural continuity. At the same time, Megiddo and other settlements in northern Israel witnessed the appearance of locally produced serving vessels influenced by some Mesopotamian traditions. That's so interesting. You got a Mesopotamian tradition they're talking about, not the Egyptian ware, others, and in the same area, and you have them being produced locally. Well, what's going on there? Well, obviously, there's Mesopotamians that knew how to make their vessels, and they traveled to this area, made the same vessels, but locally producing them. These are the Samaritans from the Bible. That's what they're describing here. It is conceivable that these forms are related in some way to the arrival of deportees from Mesopotamia or nearby regions. Again, such cool parallels. Biblical text, 2 Kings 17, the influx of Samaritans from Mesopotamians to the area under Assyrian dominance. All this suggests that the population of Megiddo in the early 7th century was composed both of locals and deportees. They're saying we've got evidence of the Babylonians coming in here, just like the Bible indicates. A change is noticed in the last third of the 7th century, time of Josiah, time of weakening Assyrian influence, immediately following the Assyrian withdrawal. The exceptional remains uncovered at Megiddo level X3, in particular, the presence of Egyptian and East Greek pottery should be linked to the establishment of an Assyrian Egyptian administrative center. And then it says here, all things together, the finds in the Area X provide the first archaeological context for the Necho-Josiah confrontation at Megiddo. So pretty cool. Okay, so what does the Bible say about this? Well, you've got two about Josiah here at Megiddo. I'll just read through. It's the 2 Kings account. And this is what's important and how they connect it to Josiah. Because Josiah is all the way in the north. And he, for some reason, decides that he's going to try and stop. And the Bible doesn't tell us really why he does this. But he does. He tries to stop the Egyptians from going to go and team up with the Assyrians to take down the growing Babylonian threat. King's account's more brief. It says this. In the days of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, where we know, again, that Pharaoh Necho is the king of Egypt at this time, and here he is mentioned in the Bible, went up against the king of Assyria. And when it says up against, it means he's going up to help him in this context. To the river Euphrates, King Josiah went against him, and he slew him at Megiddo, where he had seen him. And his servants carried him in a chariot dead from Megiddo and brought him to Jerusalem and buried him in his own sepulcher. So that's the king's account. Now the Chronicles account gives more detail. It says, and after all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, king of Egypt, went up to fight against Carchemish by the Euphrates. And Josiah went out against him. But he sent ambassadors saying, what are you doing? Why are you trying to fight against me? Verse 22, nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself that he might fight with him and hearken not unto the words of Necho from the mouth of God, and came to fight him in the valley of Megiddo. And the archers shot at the king, and Josiah and the king, and said to his servants, have me away, for I am sore wounded. And they take him to Jerusalem. So here you've got Josiah going up to Megiddo. And we already know that Josiah from the Bible had been already making incursions into this territory of Israel that belonged to Israel, where the Samaritans were, taking down their high places, taking back land, if you like, that was originally promised. And originally the Davidic dynasty controlled this area. And while he's there, he confronts the Samaritans. But then at a certain time, you've got the Assyrians or the Egyptians coming through. And coming through the area of Megiddo, going to help the Assyrians fight. And Josiah, for whatever reason, says, no, you don't. Perhaps he's like, well, this is my territory. I don't know. The Bible doesn't say. Nevertheless, it snuffed out Josiah's life sooner than everybody expected. And what they're finding at Megiddo now is that the Egyptians indeed did come through this area at the same time period of Josiah, Whether or not they established administrative center or not here, the Egyptians obviously had a lot of influence during the time period at the end of Josiah's life. And it matches well with the biblical account to show that if Josiah is going to Megiddo to stop the army coming through, maybe there's a garrison already there and Megiddo of the Egyptians. And Josiah tries to confront them and is not able to do so. But just an amazing, it's so interesting. I find these things so interesting, how you can dig at Megiddo for a century, not find a specific layer or specific building that dates to this time period after the Assyrian withdrawal, the time period of Josiah. And here they are, 2016 to 22, digging, and they find the greatest amount of Egyptian pottery anywhere in the southern Levant, and it's at Megiddo, the exact place where the Bible says that King Josiah confronted the Egyptian army and lost. But it's there in the text, and archaeology helps us out establishing some context as well. Okay, that's all we have for the program today. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the video. We're going to have a great video coming up real soon. If it's not published before this, it will be soon, with Christopher Reams and Professor Yosef Garfinkel about the excavation just drawing to a close there in Jerusalem by the gatehouse. So stay tuned to that. Be sure you subscribe and also get our emails. You can go to our website, armstronginstitute.org. Scroll down, you'll see a place that you can subscribe to our email that comes out 3 or 4 times a week whenever we have new content on our website, to make sure you don't miss a thing from the Armstrong Institute. Thanks very much for listening. I'll talk to you next time.